Our Asia correspondent is Ed White, who is in Seoul, where he is correspondent with the Financial Times. Hello, Ed.
Good morning, Catherine.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time. Let's begin with China's energy crisis. Goodness, we've been hearing about the UK's. What's the cause of China's problems?
Yes, electricity shortages have actually been worsening for months and months in China, resulting in power cuts hitting China's households in the northeast, as well as causing power rationing and outages at factories across the country. Factory owners in China and their customers worldwide are now actually being told to prepare for months and months more of disruption caused by these power supply disruptions. So the causes of this, or the key causes, are actually relatively straightforward. China relies on coal-fired power for more than two-thirds of its electricity, and the government of Xi Jinping has been trying for several years now to reduce this dependence on coal as part of Xi's broader goals of tackling air pollution and combating climate change. So across China, local governments have actually been rushing to comply with Beijing's emissions targets, and subsequently they've been restricting coal-fired power generation and also closing down coal mines. So at the same time, there have been things like price caps on electricity, which have meant demand for power has actually been unaffected despite recent coal price rises, or sharp rises this year. And that's meant that industries who should have actually found power too expensive to justify their operations, they've been able to continue using huge amounts of electricity. Now, also, while China is rapidly transitioning to renewable energy, the pace has still been probably just too slow to adapt to that loss of coal power from the system, particularly in the northeast and in Guangdong as well, in the south, and the sort of key manufacturing zones. And in the meantime, this year, energy demand has actually just really grown very fast as the Chinese economy blasted back from the depths of the pandemic. And this has really just resulted in a big mismatch between power demand and the sort of supply of electricity.
And the government response, therefore, where do we see it heading, and especially bearing in mind President Xi's decarbonisation ambitions?
Yeah, so with this crisis really now threatening to slow down China, which is obviously the world's second biggest economy, Xi's administration has been basically forced, in the short term at least, to backtrack on those climate change promises. Basically, the Chinese leadership has taken the pragmatic choice from a sort of short-term economic and probably social stability perspective. They're reverting once again to ramp up the use of coal, despite those longer-term promises to slash carbon emissions. So among the measures that have been announced just over the past week or so, the central government ordered the rapid re-expansion of coal mines in places like Inner Mongolia, the sort of key producing regions. It has also decreed sweeping electricity market reforms. These are forcing all coal-fired power generators to sell into the wholesale market, and that basically allows electricity prices to rise by as much as around 20%. So it's a big change, and they're lifting price caps for some large users. Now, that means that those companies and factories that have been operating at potentially a sort of suppressed electricity price, power will now be hopefully probably too expensive for them, and they will quickly shut down inefficient operations. China has actually also been forced to really compromise on its own trade bans, and so this is affecting things like Australian coal, and this will allow more coal to come back into the country. And then that's basically broadly going to ramp up shipments of foreign coal, all just underscoring the sort of intensity of the power crunch. Now, longer term, however, the government's actions are not really expected to mean a shift away from those longer-term goals. Most experts believe that Xi's plans to decarbonize the economy, and remembering this is a promise to actually reach carbon neutrality by 2060, so it's a very, very big change for the world's biggest polluting economy. Most experts believe that those goals remain in place and that the shift to renewables will continue. And that just means that people are expecting these supply chain disruptions, these problems around shortages, they will basically just continue. And this is especially going to be the case heading into winter. We've also got the Beijing Winter Olympics coming up. And so that is going to have massive impacts across the sort of global supply chain, obvious impacts for countries like New Zealand with that reliance on trade in China. And people are already talking about lead times for some products pushing from sort of perhaps 2-3 months. That's going now out to 4, 5, 6 months, and it could get worse over the coming months.
That is not going to help global pressures, inflationary pressures caused by the supply chain, that's for sure. Not welcome to hear at all, but it's the way it is. Now, we touched on this last time, and please elaborate on what Laos is doing with the whole matter of cryptocurrency mining.
Yes, so Laos is another of these Southeast Asian countries to really be feeling the economic impact from the loss of tourism revenues caused ultimately by the pandemic and people's inability to travel. But the financial situation for the government in Laos is actually much more critical than its neighbours like Thailand or Vietnam. This is because even before the pandemic began, the government had basically was getting close to running out of money, and it was really struggling to pay back the billions of dollars in debts that it had amassed over recent years while it had been trying to build a large amount of infrastructure. Now, this is in one of the more perhaps novel ways that we've seen of tackling such a situation from a cash-strapped nation facing a debt crisis. The Laotian government has decided to authorize the mining and trading of cryptocurrencies. Now, this is at a time when many other countries, most notably China actually, have outlawed the mining of these digital currencies. Now, very quick context, China basically completely banned cryptocurrency mining trading and trading in May. And at the time, it pointed to environmental and financial concerns. So China's share of what they call the global hash rate, and this is basically the term for the computational power, which is required to create things like Bitcoin, this rate in China fell from nearly 50% of the global share to zero just in the matter of a couple of months this year. And so that mining had to go somewhere. So also just remembering quickly that much of the concern about Bitcoin mining has been that it is a massive drain on the power system, and it has a sort of negative impact on the environment because people are basically setting up what are essentially huge data systems, flocking to areas with cheap power often, and in the case of China, with sort of coal-fired power plants. So for Laos, which has spent years borrowing billions of dollars to build hydro dams on the Mekong and its Mekong River and its tributaries, crypto mining is now being touted as something of a clean energy industry, which is potentially tapping into this massive abundance of renewable energy. And so they're trying to set up crypto mines, basically tapping into these hydro dams. And this has been met with really some mixed reactions. There are some who see it as a potentially logical step. You know, this is a country with limited resources. It does need to find a way to make revenues to pay down its debts. But other people are sort of worried that this is a really embracing of an industry that is quite spurious. You know, cryptocurrency mining is ultimately going to see the country more exposed to things like illicit trading, money laundering, which these products have been involved with. There's the international drug trade that uses cryptocurrencies, and also just sort of somewhat enmeshed in that broader concern around the economic feasibility of crypto and the sort of volatility that you have. So certainly an interesting development to keep an eye on, but still quite early days.
In South Korea, what's happening with economic policy changes?
Yeah, so radical economic policies are kind of the rage in South Korea at the moment. And this is particularly the case for the presidential front runner who is earning comparisons to Bernie Sanders. And so he is touting, South Korea is going to the polls in March next year to vote in a new president. And so the presidential frontrunner is touting a universal basic income. This is something that would be a payment of more than $400 a month. South Koreans are basically struggling at the moment among a lot of areas economically. There are chronic problems that really successive governments have not been able to address. You're talking about sort of soaring education and household costs, record high household debt. There's rising youth unemployment. There's also just an unparalleled elderly poverty problem. The most sort of staggering statistic that sums this up is that more than 40% of the elderly, that's people aged 66 or above, are actually living in poverty in South Korea. And this is a generation of Koreans who rebuilt the country after the Korean War. And I think the plight, once you're sort of here in Seoul and you see it on the street, it's all really undeniable. And so there's just been this real response from the main presidential candidates, Lee Jae-myung, who's this popular front runner and the local politician. He's just won the ruling party's primary race. He believes that this UBI is something that can be done to help sort of address this rising inequality. The plan is to basically start with an annual payment and then work down to a monthly payment over the course of 5-6 years, perhaps even longer. And this is a fairly radical and quite unconventional idea, and it would potentially make South Korea the first country in the world to actually adopt a national UBI. And that has resulted in those comparisons to Bernie Sanders.
So what are the bets on the outcome of this election, by the way? Is it looking tight?
Typically, South Korean elections go down to the wire and are often sort of pushed one way or another by a local scandal. So no one is making bets at this stage. But you'd have to say that Lee Jae-myung at the moment is quite the clear front runner. And the other thing is that actually a lot of the other candidates are also picking up quite radical economic policies. You've got even on the conservative side, which is probably comparative to the sort of National Party in New Zealand, they are touting things like half-priced homes for first home buyers to help ease the property crunch. You've got another former finance minister who's advocating for a complete overhaul of the country's legal system, which he says is basically really problematic. So wherever you are in politics in South Korea at the moment, you basically people are getting forced into really, really more radical ideas. And I think it's just the case that, you know, after a very, very long period of low interest rates, record high government spending, the money just so much money in the system, but it just doesn't seem to be helping the people who need it. And so increasingly, you're just seeing the sense of desperation, which is being reflected in the politics as well.
Thank you so much. Ed White, Financial Times in Seoul, Asia correspondent.